It's the story, stupid. Welcome to the much delayed Word Trip podcast. It's the story, stupid, number 14. Sorry for the delays. Stuff comes up. I came up with a subject for this week because of a confluence of events where I had been listening to a romance writer's podcast called The Kissy Bits, which is amusing and has some good information, but the main reason I was listening to it was because it's been well recommended, and it's a genre I don't normally listen to. So, I don't normally read either, so I was thinking that, hey, if I get a little other perspective, just like I'm normally a sci-fi writer, and I'm trying to read mysteries, I'm trying to read thrillers and horror, and literary fiction. I figure, romance is real. I've listened to westerns. Why not romance? Or read westerns. Anyway, so I was listening to it and had been contemplating, trying to think of pick out a book that I wanted to read that would fall under the romance genre, because admittedly, it's really not a genre I have any desire to read. But within romance, there is generally chick lit. And looking through Amazon's top list, I saw a book that looked like it would be chick lit, though upon further inspection, it's really not quite chick lit, as it's kind of marketed actually to teens, and it's called How Opal Mehta Got Kissed, Got Wild, and Got Alive, a novel by an Indian girl who's at Harvard, whose name I am not even going to try and butcher. But the topic of the podcast today came about because she ended up in the news. Our topic today is originality. And how do you know that you're telling an original story? And her problem ended up in that, and I'm going to take her on face value and assume it wasn't intentional. She had a book that she liked a lot, and I don't remember the name of it, and she had read it several times in high school. She's only 19 now. She's a sophomore at Harvard. She signed an obscene book deal, which I'll get into later, and wrote her book, and the book, apparently, after it came out and became fairly popular, some fans of the other work that she had also been a fan of started to compare the two and found, I think it was about 40 passages that were very similar. Things where her book said, so-and-so looked at me in a way that I had just learned about in psychology class, blah, blah, blah. And the other book had said, so-and-so looked at me like the way I had just learned about in cultural anthropology class, blah, 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 blah. Very similar in style and very similar in structure. And being so young, I'm going to take her at face value that she wasn't trying to plagiarize it, but it was something where if she'd read it several times, that word structure was stuck in her head. And anyway, they have actually recalled all of the current books that are out in the bookstores now and are going to, I guess, rework some of those phrases. They're going to go through and let her do an extra edit on them and then put the book back out there because, it was a really well-selling book and it's an interesting story about a girl who gets straight A's in high school but can't get into Harvard because she didn't have a social life. And I kind of hit this at the same time that I've had two different stories that I've been working on, and one of them has a beginning that I really like, and I really started just with this one little intro scene of a little bar in a theoretical Mexico, and one scene with a guy who's a bartender also happens to be a dentist, and he's in a very remote place, and he has a procedure that he'll pull a tooth for you, but basically you get a shot of tequila beforehand and a shot of a homebrew moonshine afterwards that helps disinfect things and numb the pain. But anyway, so I started with this scene and progressed from there, and what ended up happening is I realized after I was about 5,000 or 6,000 words into this that the story I ended up telling was disturbingly similar to El Mariachi, the Robert Rodriguez film, which also, I guess, ended up becoming Desperado, with the guy whose name I can't think of, Antonio Banderas. And so I'm really wondering how other people maintain originality in their works, because there are so many stories that have been told, and as I'm going to assume this girl's name is pronounced Kavya, the author of Opal Mehta, how she got stuck into something where her internal voice had been influenced enough by this other author that she actually wrote so much like her that she's actually having to rewrite her book. And for me, I obviously haven't gotten to the point of getting it published, so all I ended up doing was stopping writing the story and working on a different one, and I'm going to go back to that beginning because I like the beginning, and I've got to figure out a different plot structure to go with it. Because I don't really have any use for it as flash fiction, because it's not even flash fiction, it's just a scene. So that's my quandary this week, is how do you maintain originality in your work? I think that to some degree there's a necessity for authors to read a lot, if for no other reason than learning what's out there. So you're not telling the story that's already been told many times. And yes, it's arguably there's only so many plots, so people are always telling the same story that's been told. But if there's certain similarities to a relatively modern popular story, well, that's something you're gonna have to look at. Which, you know, look at Dan Brown and the whole fiasco with the aspects from the Da Vinci Code that were in the Holy Grail, Holy Blood, Holy War, whatever the heck the name of that book was, and how he managed to get out of it because it wasn't identical, but this girl has a similar problem. So think about how you're going to maintain originality in your work for this week. How you're going to overcome the problem of not being like everyone else. Now, the other thing I wanted to comment on, too, was on the author of How Opamata Got Kissed, her book deal. She apparently, at 19, signed a six-figure book deal, supposedly like $500,000, for two books. And she's a sophomore at Harvard, and I know there are authors out there who have been writing and writing and writing for years and years and are arguably at least as good, if not better than she is. Now, admittedly, I haven't read the book yet, though I did just pick it up from the library, who can't get a deal at all. And I think that, and I think it's been mentioned before in Writer's Digest and such, how your large publishing houses and your big book deals seem to be more hinged upon you being a saleable character as an author than the quality of your work. Not to say that her work isn't good, it may be, but the fact that she is a 19-year-old, attractive Harvard student who's writing a book that's catchy and amusing and witty gives her an in, makes her more marketable as an author, as opposed to just marketing the book. And I think it all goes back to J.K. Rowling and her being a mom who wrote the book in her spare time, and then they kind of pushed the book and it became a hit, and it really was the iconic nature of the author that really brought things to bear for her. And while her story was great, there's much of her that was really sold too. And then you have guys like Christopher Paolini, who wrote the Eldest and Eragon, and similarly he wrote the book when he was young. He's got a good little shtick to be telling as an author about his story, almost like the big book deals from the major publishers. They're looking for somebody that they can sell and sell multiple books from, not necessarily in a series like Harry Potter, but sell multiple books from, but also somebody who will be interesting to show up on Live with Regis and Kelly or on Oprah and be an interesting person. Which I think, yes, I understand it because it's a business, and if you can get somebody who's an interesting person and they interview well and they show up well on TV, they're going to sell a whole lot more books. So yes, it's all business. But I just find it interesting, and I'm not going to say disturbing, but concerning, that there are so many great authors out there that aren't going to be seen because they are, well, they're authors, and it's not like all of us are extroverts who are really good at being out there and being seen. If you look at William Gibson, who, admittedly, I don't really like much of what I've read from him, but I know he has a huge fan base, and he's considered a good author, and I've seen him interviewed before, and he's really a very antisocial type person, and it's interesting that that's going to be a bigger factor, it appears, as the years go on with the publishing world because of the pop culture nature of our society. Anyway, I'm running on to about 10 minutes here, and I hope you have a great week, and I hope to get another podcast out before too much longer. I'm hoping to get back to doing this every week, but It looks like I'll be taking a new job, possibly, which will adjust my schedule some, and I'll have to figure out how that's going to work. Please drop us a line of email at worddrip@gmail.com with any comments, suggestions, ideas, or just to let me know that somebody's actually still listening to this thing. Or leave a voicemail at 678-810-0967. I'll gladly play it on the air. And remember, it's the story, stupid.